to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jody Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners. Today, I am joined by our VP Client Success, Eleni. Hello, Eleni.
Hi, Jody. Happy to be here.
We have a great episode coming our way, but we want to share a recent moment we brought to life for our client, ZO Skin Health.
Yes, this was a really exciting influencer event designed to connect with creators in a way that felt elevated, educational, and deeply rooted in the brand's clinical authority.
Right. So this took place at ZO's Beverly Hills Skin Clinic, and we had a beautifully curated group of influencers there for a totally immersive brand moment.
Mm-hmm. The guests had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Obagi himself. They experienced facial treatments, they used ZO products, of course, and they engaged directly with the science behind the brand.
And every detail of this event was very thoughtfully designed. We had a custom coffee bar with special blue drinks, and we had caviar service. So it was both luxurious and incredibly intentional.
I heard the caviar service was a big hit. Very, very special. So Base Beauty's role spanned from concepting, event planning, and execution. We curated the talent, and we made sure that the content that was created can extend well beyond the event itself.
Right. So this is always the goal, right? Building EMV. We have to, of course, have a great moment in real life, but we want to create something meaningful that continues to drive impact across social and digital.
Yeah. And especially for a brand like ZO, it's about balancing clinical credibility with cultural relevance.
I loved it. I had so much FOMO not being there myself.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so let's get into today's episode. This is part of our Power Duo series. This is a very special episode because we were sitting down with sisters. So yeah. Allison Taylor and Jacqueline Taylor, they're the founders of Le Prunier, and their story is incredible.
Yeah, it was a really, really special conversation. Their story starts from their 100-plus-year-old family farm in California, and they've turned something as unexpected as dried plums into a whole skincare line.
Right. And it's not just any skincare line. They back it with real research, incredibly rich sustainability stories, and an amazing full circle operation on the farm. So they're literally growing, pressing, and producing everything on their own land.
But one of the moments that really stood out to me was how the business took off after a viral post from Chrissy Teigen, 30,000 orders overnight. And from there, they managed to scale the business while staying true to their values.
And you'll also hear about their dynamic as sisters and co-founders, how they divide their roles and responsibilities, how they've built a business that prioritizes both growth and family.
They would also like to offer our viewers 20% off to try their products. So you can use code BEAUTY20 to try anything at leprunier.com. Let's get into it. Here's episode 306, Allison and Jacqueline Taylor of Le Prunier.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We're in our Power Duos theme. And for the first of the day, we have sisters as Power Duos. So super exciting. Welcome Allison Taylor, co-founder, and Jacqueline Taylor, co-founder of Le Prunier. Did I pronounce it right?
You did. Yes. Good
Le job. Prunier.
Great. Thank you.
So I'm so happy that you're here. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. It's a career journey show. So we're going to dig deep into, you know, what motivated you to become entrepreneurs, but also everything that happened long before that. And we'll start with our favorite question, which is, when you're 10 years old, what do you want to be when you grew up? So Allison, we'll start with you. What was that dream career?
I think it was like twofold. I also wanted to be a veterinarian. I had horses, or we had horses and dogs and all sorts of animals. We grew up on a farm. So I always loved animals. And then I also secretly wanted to be a singer. So,
do you have a nice voice?
I love to sing. And then I actually pursued that later. So I followed up on it. But yeah, here we are doing nothing related to the two of those.
And where was the farm?
It's Northern California. So it's right outside of Sacramento. It's a small town called Yuba City, also known as like Sutter County. And it's just very agricultural based. So beautiful area. That's where our great grandfather founded the farm in 1916.
Wow. 1916. Yeah. And it's still in the family.
It's very much still in the family.
Wow. Yep. Okay, so Jacqueline, what was your dream job way back when?
Yeah, so I always had acne. And so that was like even early on. So even at a very young age, literally 10 years old through my teens, it plagued me. So I have always been very passionate and very conscientious about what, you know, ingredients and labels. So did I know I was going to go into skincare? No, not at all. I would say, you know, twofold. I did competitive gymnastics for many years. So from when I was super young up to all the way in high school, I used to travel a lot for it. So, you know, always wanted to become a professional gymnast.
She was super good.
So were you as good at gymnastics as you were, was Jacqueline as good at gymnastics as Allison was good at singing?
I would say the passion.
Yeah.
The passion.
I don't know. I mean, I did it for like 2 years in my 20s. So I was like, I'm going to pursue my passion, do it right before we started the business. Mm-hmm. And I had some record labels reach out, which was cool. So, but then I was like, I'm not doing this. I want to start this career.
And how does a teen gymnastics career end?
Oh, so that was in high school. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, of course, graduated and then accepted into UCLA. And then going into college, I actually wrote my entrance letter about wanting to go become a dermatologist and go into skincare. So that is something that through my youth and then, you know, even in college has been very close to me. And so, of course, graduated and, you know, not a dermatologist now, but, you know, of course, in skincare and doing something that we very much love.
Okay, so let's stay on that theme because I had friends mm-hmm. in high school who wanted to be a brain surgeon. And guess what? Now they're like a brain surgeon. So when did that shift happen for you? When did you decide, you know what, I don't want to go into dermatology. I don't want to pursue medical school.
Oh, gosh. I actually did a internship in college. It was helping a maxillofacial surgeon extract a tooth. And so I was sitting there with the student, and it was an abscess. And I scared him so much, I realized in that moment, I couldn't handle blood.
So, wait, you scared the patient?
I scared the patient. So he saw my face basically drain. And in that moment, I just realized, you know, I really love medicine. I love science, but, you know, extracting a tooth, having blood, just
maybe not surgery.
Not for me.
You did not fall to the floor, though.
No, I did not, but I had to go lay down.
Did the doctor have a conversation with you afterwards that this might not be the right path for you?
Oh, no, I think he was very polite. It was just more internally. I knew this is not for me.
So then let's talk about first jobs after school. Allison, we can start with you. What was that like first job where you're like, oh my God, like I'm part of something?
Yeah. Well, I think it's super important to talk about like when we were young, we worked farmers markets. That was so integral to our understanding of the farm and working with, you know, customers and just exchanging money. Like that was very formative. But after college, I worked at Mother Denim. I always really loved fashion and entertainment. And so I assisted the two co-founders for about a year. And the salary was super dismal, but like I loved it. And I watched them build that brand from, you know, the very beginning. So I was in there when they just set up this office space and they were sending out packages, PR packages, and I was helping them with, you know, sales reports. And I just touched every area of the business. And actually one of the co-founders was very helpful. And when we went to launch our business, she really gave me a lot of guidance and support. So I still to this day talk to her and I'm like, you were such an expander for me. So
that's so sweet. How did you get that job?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think I got it through a recruiter and then a friend of mine at the time was their photographer and just vouched for me and was like, she's great, hire her.
So you have to use your network, right?
Yes, totally.
And Jacqueline, what was that first formative job for you?
Sure. I actually ended up going to culinary school after college. So I feel as though growing up on a farm, being close to organic farming, I've always had an appreciation for ingredients. So with that, after I graduated culinary school, I started doing retreats. So I would host retreats. I would put together menus. I really, really love just ingredients, the science of it. So that for me was so fun, putting that together, presenting something that was very creative, albeit I'm doing that now in the cosmetic space, but you know, there's overlap there. And I do find there's duality in the sense that I really pull from the food sector. So, and I intertwine that as we do things now. So,
So your company name, Le Prunier, this means plum?
It's the plum tree in French.
The plum tree. So were you growing plums on your family farm?
Yeah. So it's definitely evolved over the years. Like came from very humble beginnings in 1916. We farmed everything you could think of, peaches, walnuts, prunes now primarily, but apples, like it ran the gamut. And then my father really had the foresight in the 80s to remove the orchards and plant. He saw a niche market in Europe and Korea and Japan for dried plums. So ripped out a lot of the trees, planted organic dried plums. And then that was really in the 80s. And then he shifted to organic farming primarily. So really kind of a trailblazer in that sense. And then when we were in high school, especially like, I want to say it was like freshman or sophomore year. I really remember those trips. He would take us to Japan and Korea and we would sit in on these business meetings And that was...
Wow, what a cool experience for teenagers.
So cool. And obviously, they focus primarily on the food. So he's making baby food, prune juice, like extracts and things like that. We would sit in on the meetings and they would be talking about it as this beauty food with incredible benefits. It wasn't just like a digestive that everyone here in the United States thinks of dried plums. They, you know, make you go to the bathroom. And yes, that is very true, but...
Is it really true?
Yeah. Oh. They have very high sorbitol. So that's the laxative effect. But we would just sit in on the meetings like little flies on the wall and we would absorb it. And, you know, there was no pressure on us to go into the family business, but he was just so proud to bring us into the fold. And so the seed was planted, like, so to speak, a very long time ago. Yeah.
So the pun intended.
Yeah.
Jacqueline, exactly. What do you think your dad was studying at the time to say, like, I'm going to put it all on plum?
You know, he went through multiple iterations when he was farming. And I really do feel as though there was a demand just in general for the plum. Because as Ellie mentioned, we used to do walnuts and, you know, watermelons. But the demand, and also too, from a shelf life standpoint, that is very important. Because if you have a fresh peach, of course, that is going to turn very quickly. So the shelf life for the prune, inherently, it is, you know, natural shelf life. So with that, we really ripped out all of our crops and he, you know, replaced that with dried plums, prunes, and then really just focused on his energy on expanding that, both domestically and then internationally too.
And Jacqueline, does a plum grow on a tree that looks like an apple tree? What does it look like?
It does. I mean, this is actually part of our packaging. So it's so beautiful in springtime. I feel as though it's akin to cherry blossom season in Japan. And that's actually the inspiration for the side of our packaging. The flowers are very delicate. So it does look like it's just beautiful, lush, white, pink flowers. It's really
like
lovely.
Ikebana is like the Japanese floral arrangement style. And so we really wanted to incorporate that with the packaging. So.
Yes. And who's living on the family farm? Does someone live on the family farm? No, you live and work on the family farm.
So our parents are still very much up there. They're about 5 minutes away from the farm, but the farm is, it's about 1500 acres and that's where the house.
Oh, this is not like, I'm picturing like a cute little farm. This is not a cute little farm. This is like,
it's a cute little farm, but it's an industrial farm at this point. And the home that my great grandfather built is still very much there. And it is like the happiest place for all of us. It's such a meaningful part of our family history.
Yeah. Parents live close by. Yeah. We're, you know, a little outside of the area, but we certainly go back, we visit, oversee the life cycle of everything. So, but they're there and so happy when you get to go visit and see them.
So when did the idea develop for taking these plums that you saw were being used for food and deciding like, oh, I'm going to build a skincare brand?
Sure. Well, we always knew we wanted to find a way to work together. And I think that appreciation didn't really happen until later in life after we were both out of college and thought, okay, how do we come together, work together, build and create a business? We all know that we love skincare and beauty products. And in doing that, so but with a background in science, our father was literally, he was throwing away these dried plums as waste, quite literally. Yes.
The seeds. Yeah.
And with that, so, you know, the notion was Tufts University did a study and dried plums contain more antioxidants than kale, blueberries, and spinach. And so with that, you know, the thought was, okay, if that's the case, then would the byproducts hold true and have the equal amount of antioxidants? Lo and behold, thank goodness, we did testing and that was the case. And really, I just remember, you know, presenting it to our father and, you know, my sisters and I and saying, what are we doing throwing this away? Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it was different because the industry as a whole is predominantly, you know, male dominated. And so I think it's just a different take, but it's something that when we did speak to our father, he's totally on board with. But, you know, we've now created this separate channel. And of course, a business
stream.
Yes, a new revenue stream.
So you mentioned sisters. So you're actually, it's three of you. Yep. Are all three of you in the business?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So Elaine, she's not here with us today, but she just had her second child. So she's on a little bit of leave. But yeah,
wait, does she really leave or is she like checking emails?
She's really leaving. No, she's left. She's taking some time, which is good. You know, we totally support it. But yeah, she was very involved in the operations finance side of things, and we've got a good team supporting her role. So yeah, all good.
That's a gift for her to have people doing the work.
Yeah, so for sure. I think, you know, Jackie has three kids. So when she was busy raising those guys, I kind of stepped in to help. Yeah. Eventually, when I have kids, she'll help me.
Yeah, I know. I pass the baton as needed.
But as a family dynamic, isn't it hard to be three of you together and not talk about work, even though there's a baby in her arms?
It's, I feel as though we're pretty good about it. Like, if we do a family trip, so we went to Santa Barbara for, you know, over the holidays, I find that we really just don't talk about work. It's like we play with the kids, you know, hang out, have dinner, have a glass of wine. Weekends, we don't talk work. Yeah. It's really, you have to have healthy boundaries and knowing that, you know, after 5 p.m., everybody, we have family time, dinner time, and get back out of the next morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hard to do.
Yeah.
Right? Just because I'm sure you love running your business.
For sure. I will say, like, I actually remember commenting to Jackie after this Christmas trip. I was like, I think that's the first time in eight years since we've had the business where I didn't open my laptop. Because I was like,
really?
We haven't all been, you know, in the same room to just as a family with all the nieces and nephews. And I was like, let's just focus, you know, let's just enjoy it and be present. So
it was nice.
Yeah. She's doing a good job because she's got the kids, but yeah, I'm still checking late night.
Well, it's really hard because it's part of your soul, right?
Absolutely.
Very much, so much. Yes.
Okay. So you had this idea. Mm-hmm. You found out that, yes, the seeds or the pits is what you called it.
Mm-hmm. So the kernels, actually.
The kernels have as much power as the pulp. Is that what we call the rest of
as
it?
As the extract, as the exterior, as the actual, like, the edible
flesh
one.
Of the fruit.
Right, the flesh. Okay. Then why did this still become, like, an idea, like, worth pursuing?
Sure. Yeah. So I went to Allison, has a background in marketing.
Basically, she approached me and was kind of like, originally the idea was maybe we'll sell this as an ingredient to L'Oreal or Estee Lauder. She had done like 2.5 years of research. I was still in my music career having fun. And she's like, what do you think of this? Like, would you want to, you know, work together on this? This is the idea. What if we sell it as an ingredient? And I was like, okay, I think this would really work, but we should tell the story of the brand because that was more of my background, is coming from these brands and watching them evolve and knowing that we have this story to tell. We're really fortunate that we have that. So yeah, I was like, let's do this, but I want to position it as like a D2C, B2B brand, and let's launch it. So we did.
And how long ago was that?
2018. So we launched actually at Indie Beauty. It was our very, first expo that we did. We didn't even have packaging. So we showed up, I think maybe we did, it was like mock packaging or something like that.
Yeah, we had prototype packaging. I had pasted like paper. We just went and we were like, let's see how it goes.
Yep.
And we met the Neiman Marcus buyers there. They came by the booth. They talked to us, loved the story. And they were like, we want to bring this on. How fast can you guys launch?
And
we were like, oh God.
Gotta go. Gotta go.
Yeah. So we went in November of 2017 to that show. And then we launched with them. I think it was January, February. So we did like packaging in a flash. It was crazy.
So let's talk a little bit about this power duo dynamic. And you're really a power trio. So you can bring your other sister into this too. What is it, Allison, that Jacqueline enables you to do really well in terms of your collaboration?
Oh gosh, so many things. Jackie, I feel like, can be very grounding. She's a good, you know, motherly force on the business with everyone as far as team building too. That's really helpful. Yeah, no, but I think our strengths really complement each other's because she's much stronger in the R&D and the formulation side than I am. So I really let her do her thing and she lets me do mine. And I think that unspoken trust and, you know, intuition is very helpful. It's, yeah.
And Jacqueline, how does Allison help elevate you?
Sure. Definitely on the marketing side, not my wheelhouse. I should not be doing it. so I feel as though, you know, it's good. We both have our strengths and they complement each other so well. But with that too, just an understanding at the end of the day, trust and honesty. And I feel as though that is so important. I know at any time I can come to Allison and talk to her and just be very real. Mm-hmm. Hey, is this, you know, what do we think about this? Hash through an idea. Yeah, work through things.
Mm-hmm. So this is a family business. Mm-hmm. I'm an entrepreneur myself, so I know it's not easy. Mm-hmm. What are some situations that have happened recently where, like, the fact that you are a duo and a trio really helped you out of, like, a bind or a really difficult situation?
For sure. I mean, I think back on the biggest dilemma, but it was like a blessing. It was the viral Chrissy Teigen moment. So she talked about it in 2020. Going into the holiday season when we were like intentionally low on product, ready to rebrand. We were going to sell through everything and then reorder in the new year. And she talked about it and we sold out overnight. We had like 30,000 orders and it was a wait list for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that was a moment. And mind you, we're still a self-funded brand and intentionally so. And so we just had to step back and be like, wow, how are we going to scale things and do it really carefully and communicate with a customer? And so it was like all hands on deck. I think we we just fully committed ourselves. We were already committed, but this was like, okay, we're going to go deep and we are going to start building out the pipeline for future mm-hmm. launches. We launched Plum Screen, the SPF, right after. Mm-hmm. Took a couple years, but yeah. And then just the communication with the customer, really instilling that like trust and letting them know, like, there's 6 months of orders that are back ordered at the moment. We got you guys. It's coming, but just be patient. So that was a huge growing yeah. kind of experience for us.
And also having the family farm be on board too, because that meant yeah. getting new equipment, scaling. So it was just a collective, something all hands on deck. Everybody mm-hmm. had to help and rapidly scale.
Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting point. Mm-hmm. The brand is a separate entity from the farm yeah. and the farm mm-hmm. has equipment.
It does. Well, technically equipment that Le Prunier owns. So we buy all the equipment, but we do have it on site there. So mm-hmm. we can really, that's also too, just a point of differentiation, really overseeing that entire life cycle on the farm.
Right. So that's a cost that most brands don't have, farm equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's right? We invest heavily in the farm equipment.
Okay. So a lot of brands will get their ingredients from suppliers right. and their yeah. bottles from another supplier and yeah. Yeah. squeeze it in there and shake it up. Okay. So, but mm-hmm. now you're buying tractors and mm-hmm. who's it, what's it machines. And that's, you know, eating into like what yeah. maybe marketing expenses totally. Or like something else you can spend the money on. Mm-hmm. So, How does one plan for like what kind of capital improvements need to be made on a farm mm-hmm, to be able sure. to increase your inventory when these things are so expensive?
Sure. I mean, in a way, you know, because a farm, reducing our reliance on gas, and so having sheep on the farm, that actually helps getting down our cover crops. And so just being strategic on how we do things on the farm
yeah,
to reduce
our
costs.
We farm, what she's alluding to is like farming sustainably. So really mm-hmm. focusing on, you know, reducing the need to use machinery. We still very much have machinery on the farm, but like the Dorper sheep, they help. That's really mm-hmm. great. And it's also a fun marketing moment. But I think, you know, when that viral moment happened, we invested heavily into the machinery. And when we're not talking like tractors, right? Because there's tractors on the farm, but mm-hmm. we're looking at the oil press that we have on mm-hmm. the farm, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. filtration system that's also set up. Now we have two oil presses. Mm-hmm. You know, we keep it pretty proprietary and we don't really do tours there because we want to keep our little secrets. But yeah, there's really expensive pieces of machinery that now yeah. we're good. But yeah, when that moment happened, we were finally in a really good yeah. spot to be able to afford those things, pay ourselves, hire more people on yeah. the team. And it was just a really fortunate kind of accident. It yeah. wasn't planned.
So does the brand own the sheep?
Yeah.
Oh, and how many sheep do you own?
There's like 200.
200 now, yeah. They always have babies, so there's more, and then, so, you know, it's crazy.
So, they're your employees.
They are. They're my kids love when we go to the house. Yeah. Grandma and grandpa's, they love to go see the sheep.
Okay, so the sheep are working for you all day long.
All day long.
But not at night.
They get breaks.
yeah. And like some brands need more community managers, you need more sheep.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
But what other unusual things does one need to buy when they have a farm?
We have something, it's like a revolutionary wastewater filtration system. So it's called Biofiltro. And what that is a large, it's like a vat, the size of this room. And there's millions of worms that live inside of this, and it helps to digest the wastewater from the processing facility. So that is great for us because we can recycle it when we're doing, additional farming. You know, it goes right mm-hmm. into the irrigation. We're solar operated, all of the facilities in California are, so it's been for like the last 15, 20 years. So, you know, things like that. Those are the important ones, at least.
They're good investments in the sense that they help us scale and grow mm-hmm. and do that in a quick manner.
Okay, can we just talk about the worms for another second?
Yeah, you may.
So I don't know how many square feet this room is, but a yeah. giant vet, and yeah. there's worms at the bottom, like millions of worms?
It's millions of worms. Concept, it's right? like just dirt, and it's kind of all damp, you know, because uh-huh. the water's coming in there. And then it's just filled with worms, and they digest the biomass. Mm-hmm. It's okay. crazy.
But the amazing part about it too is the water, because it is so nutrient rich, mm-hmm. that we actually put back into the orchards mm-hmm. and of course goes in directly into yeah. the trees.
Right. Yeah, so it's all regenerative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you need a lot of water to make, to basically crush the kernels. And then you have wastewater from that process.
The mm-hmm. water is actually, it's the water is not necessarily use during the oil process. It's more so when you're like drying the pits, drying the fruit, and then we extract the pits. So there's a whole other machinery kind of set up that's just for the food element of the fruit.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so this
is wastewater from the food processing.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have the worms. The worms do their job, and then you can water the plants.
And then
the
we can irrigate.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. And you own that equipment as the brand, or is that the farm's equipment?
That is the farm's equipment, that specifically. Okay. But like all the oil press stuff is ours.
It's just so unusual, right?
Yeah.
And you know this, a skincare brand would have on their line items the things they own, sheep and tractors and stuff. I imagine like a lot of people turn to you for advice on like trying to do the same thing that you're doing because it seems super cool. Do you get like notes from people, other entrepreneurs?
I've had some some interesting people reach out. Some people in like the cannabis space, and you know, just random notes all the time. I know when we were starting, we both looked to Tata Harper's business because they built a very, insular kind of farm operation where they do everything in-house, and they're even taking it to like the formulations in-house. Mm-hmm. We're not doing all of that in-house yet, but that is a goal of ours.
And does your key ingredient get sold to third-party, like, chemical companies?
No. We definitely do get asked, but it's something that, you know, that is really the throughput of the brand and what keeps it very unique because, of course, as we know, the skincare space is very saturated. So what is the point of differentiation? And that is really where we can pull from. I feel like it's your kid in a candy store. Mm-hmm. There's so many beautiful things to pull from on the ranch that you can create beautiful new ingredients. And then that is really what we integrate into all of our products.
Mm-hmm. This is so fascinating. I would have a million more questions about life on the farm, but let's move on to some topics that entrepreneurs think about a lot, which is defining success. I'm an entrepreneur myself. I certainly feel like seduced by success. Like you get that media placement, maybe, or the Chrissy Teigen moment. You're like, oh, I want more of that. I'm hungry for more of that. Once you get a taste of it. But you talked about balancing, like having your family time, you know, making sure that the laptop's closed. So Jacqueline, we'll start with you. Like, how would you have defined success like early on, maybe when you were after the doctoring idea, but maybe during the culinary world, like how would you define success in your career then? And how do you define it now?
Sure. Not so much with the culinary. I mean, really, I would say early on just in business, whether it be securing new large accounts, that felt like, a big win and going after, you know, big accounts. And I feel as though now it's really working together as a collective team, sharing those wins together and driving towards a similar goal. And I think that is so powerful, and to see the happiness that that brings when you see everyone on your team just celebrating those wins and sharing that.
Love that. And Allison, what about for you?
Like early on in my career, I think it was, I was really excited about the prospect of working with these incredible brands. Like I worked for Giorgio Armani for a little bit and then Mother Dunham, as I mentioned. I love just being like in those environments. That for me was really enriching. I picked up so much. I was like a sponge. I just absorbed it all. And that was fulfilling. You know, I wasn't making a ton of money in these positions, but it was just like, I knew it was leading towards a greater kind of end result. But now I think, you know, of course, what Jackie says really resonates because I think after 8 years, we've worked with a lot of the same employees, really proud of that. But I also, you know, the businesswoman in me is like, I want to see year over year growth. And when I see things like that, I'm like, yes, like that makes me really happy. Of course, moments like Chrissy or like when we're on GMA and I get to go on air and talk about it, like those things are super exciting. We're just really excited to create more brand awareness as we go.
When I was younger, I just saw success mean like oodles of money, you know, like rolling in dough. I really had a very narrow view. I didn't have any, but I had a very narrow view of what success is like, and I've had really interesting responses from our guests today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people seem really honest about how meaningful it is to like create success for the other people on your team.
Mm-hmm.
It's really inspiring.
Totally.
Okay, so our last question before we move into our game, let's talk about energy. Energetically, like this is hard, right? Yeah. Running a business is hard.
Yeah.
Adjusting cash flow is hard. You know, tariffs, things not going your way, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jacqueline, let's start with you. Like, what are your de-stressing strategies?
Sure. Yeah, to be grounded, definitely Saturday, you know, check out. Again, no work then. I like to go on hikes with my children, my husband, really be in touch with nature. I feel like that gives me a clear head, but also I can come back, hit the ground running on Monday after I've had just a little bit of clear-headed time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Allison?
I really take this like very seriously. The past year I've been very like deep diving into wellness and just, I love yoga. I do a lot of breath work too. I enjoy that. I make my husband do it now and he's like, what is this? But I find that I'm just, I don't know, it makes me so much more even and just like calm throughout the week. So yeah, yoga, breath work and all those.
What I found, and we were talking about this earlier, is like I forget to breathe.
Yeah.
Get really excited about like things that I'm thinking about or conversations I'm having and I speak rapidly and I'm going to start practicing more like actual just breathing through the day.
Totally. Yeah. That's the thing. Meditation, all of that. That's great.
So let's move on to our game. So we talked about family travel, family schedule being so important to both of you. So we're going to do a theme tied to skincare inspired travel destinations.
Okay.
So it's a this or that. I'm going to give you options for how you'd like to spend your time on sort of a skincare themed vacation and you'll tell me where you choose. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. So the first one is we're calling a hydration vacation. Are you going to go to Reykjavik in Iceland, soaking in the Blue Lagoon silica-rich geothermal waters, followed by icy plunges, or go to Bali, Indonesia for flower milk baths, drinking fresh aloe and herbal tonics?
1,000% Bali.
I've been to Bali. I love it. I would go to Bali again.
Next vacation is a luxury skin reset. So first option, going to Seoul. So you went to Seoul as teenagers, right?
Yeah, Seoul
a bunch. You can have a professional 10-step facial in LED light therapy and a glass skin treatment, or you can go to Paris for and have a pharmacy skincare haul at the legendary French chemist and facial massages focus on lymphatic drainage. Are you going to Seoul or are you going to Paris?
I would say Seoul because I love Myeongdong and visiting there and it's so many ideas, so definitely Korea.
Everybody loves Paris, but I feel like Seoul, they're just, Koreans are so ahead of the game in terms of skincare. We draw a lot of inspiration from there, so I would want to go.
How old were you on your first trip to Korea?
First time to Japan was 8th grade for me, but I don't remember.
Probably like teen, sometime around there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, next theme is acne versus aging. So your option one is going to the Dead Sea in Jordan for a mineral mud mask straight from the source and salt water floating for inflammation. For inflammation reduction. Or you can go to Tuscany, Italy for antioxidant-rich wine facials and olive oil-based skincare rituals. Where are you heading?
I've never been to Jordan, so I would opt for Jordan. That sounds amazing.
I would say Italy.
Okay.
Yeah. Italy.
And last one, ultimate glow fantasy. Kyoto, Japan for rice water cleansing rituals and walking meditation through bamboo forests. Or Marrakesh, Morocco for rose water toners and argan oil treatments. Where are you going?
These are all lovely places.
Yeah, I know. These are great ideas.
I would certainly say, because we drive inspiration, actually, that is the Ikebana arrangement on our packaging, hands down Japan.
Yeah. Kyoto, it's so special. Beautiful place. Yeah.
There's a bonus question. If your skin could talk at the end of one of these trips, what would it say to you?
Gosh. Traveled a lot.
I think just, I don't know. I think my skin behaves the most when I am doing less and aggravating it the least. So just, you know, everything in moderation, just be gentle. Just in general for people listening, just like be gentle to your skin. If you're switching products, like be mindful of what you're incorporating and be careful with it because, it can overload quickly.
I think my skin would say I'm on a lot of airplanes and it's very dry, so it's very thirsty and take care of it.
Drink more water.
Hydration. Yeah.
Totally. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much. It's been such a fun conversation. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.